Welcome to episode 216 of the G2 on 5G. It's the latest Insight Scoop on everything 5G. We cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by More Insights and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend, and joining me again this week is fellow analyst Anshul Sag. Let's get started with my first topic. So Anshul, you and I just got off of a live stream with T-Mobile, and they've announced four new enhancements to its T-Priority 5G slice for first responders. So I want to cover that and then have a discussion with you about what you thought about the live stream. Four things that were mentioned. One, that the city of New York and its first responders are exclusively using T-Mobile's network and the T-Priority slice for first responder applications. The second is an announcement of partnerships with a number of different companies, including Samsung, GTAC, and Skydo. Third, exclusive benefits for individual first responders, like free access to the T-Priority network slice. And then finally, the $2 million donation for charitable support to the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, which supports families that have lost first responders. At a high level, they did this in New York. It just ended. You and I dropped off. But they talked about their capacity with their standalone 5G network, compared it to FirstNet's LTE capabilities. And I think the stat that Callie Field, that leads T-Mobile for Business, used was a 10x improvement in capacity versus FirstNet. I would need to verify that. But also, not to be outdone, because they are the grand marketers, later tonight, they are throwing a party with Post Malone, and they're inviting thousands of first responders in the New York area. So what do you think about all that?
There's a lot to talk about, a lot to cover, as you just said. I think the interesting thing is that they're including satellite messaging free for the Go5 first responder plan. Yeah. So I think that's interesting. That makes a lot of sense, too. And then on top of that, I think that this is just them trying to show the amount of value that first responders can get with T-Mobile, because this is a fairly robust network that has a lot of capacity, and they are prioritizing first responders above all else, which is why this slice exists. Mm-hmm. So I think they're trying to build trust, but also show value, because a lot of these first responders are used to using FirstNet and Verizon, and they want to show them that they are not only competitive, but better in ways. And it will be really interesting to see how this shakes out over time. Obviously, T-Priority is fairly new. It's not even a year old at this point. Yeah. So I think it's going to take some time for them to show momentum. But I think New York being their really first big customer for T-Priority, which we already knew because they had talked about that when they first launched T-Priority.
At the Capital Markets Day that you and I attended. Yeah.
So that's not really new news, but what I think is interesting is that the city of New York seems very satisfied and happy with the service. And truthfully, T-Mobile's network is world class in New York. So it makes sense for New York City to use the best 5G network for this application. Whenever I go to New York, I generally don't even bother using Wi-Fi in the hotels I stay at, because I'm getting 600 to 700 megabits per second over T-Mobile's network. So even a fraction of that just being dedicated for first responders, I think makes a lot of sense. It will be interesting to see what happens in other metropolitan areas. I have a feeling that their first customers that they'll get in this T-Priority segment will most likely be in places where they already have pretty good coverage. Let's say Kansas City, right? That's one of their old HQs for Sprint. Right. I think you're in Kansas City right now, right?
I am, and I'm freezing my ass off. We got 6 inches of snow last night. So.
But yeah, the stuff like that, I think those will be the low-hanging fruit. And then once those really show, I think they'll just use us as proof points as to why other cities should adopt.
New York City is a hell of an anchor point because it boasts the largest first responder team in the entire nation. And there were some stats that Callie Field referenced. 9 million 911 calls. That can't be on a daily basis, can it? Maybe it is, but it was staggering, the volume of calls. And obviously, it's a huge city. And yeah, I think what T-Mobile is doing is very unique. It's certainly showcasing its standalone network. there have really been, from the competition standpoint, not anything that's similar to this. And you could argue that this deployment in New York City is a great example of the power of network slicing, to be able to slice a part of the public network and guarantee levels of latency and throughput. And some of the applications include drone, with Scotty-O. And so I mean, I think it's super compelling. I do believe that, that other mobile network operators will follow. AT&T has invested a lot in FirstNet. I have to go verify some of those claims that T-Mobile made about capacity. And it wasn't really an apples to orange comparison. But on the surface, you're right. The New York City announcement, that's not new news. That was announced at the Capital Markets Day that you and I attended in San Francisco last year. But maybe a nuance to what was announced today was that the city of New York has completely standardized on T-Mobile as its its primary mobility provider. So anyway,
I was just gonna add, the Samsung partnership is for rugged devices like smartphones and tablets.
Right.
Skydio is for drones, and Getac is for laptops. So they have all of the right partners in place now to roll that out and have the pre-qualified devices already running on the network. Yeah. Obviously, they'll add more. They'll probably have to add Toughbook to that for laptops. And there will be other smartphones and other drones. But I think these three partners are a very strong place to start.
Yeah. And I did ask a question that wasn't answered around, are there any sort of plans for unique, beyond the device stuff, any sort of unique applications that the first responders can leverage on this network slice? One of the presenters, he came from a municipality, not in New York, but I think it was from Florida, and talked about how important it was to provide first responders with personal access on their phones when these networks are congested, so that at the end of a very long day taking care of others, that they can connect over video or FaceTime with their family and friends. Yeah, on the surface, it's super powerful, definitely complements what AT&T is doing with FirstNet. And I do believe that other mobile network operators will follow. But
hey, we need a rugged one of these.
What's that?
We need a rugged one of these.
For sure, man. Hey, let's go to your first topic. And this is really big news. It's something that you and I have been talking about for almost 5 years, but Apple finally launched its first 5G modem.
Yes. I've already written a research note about this, which we'll probably be publishing in the next couple of days. And it's interesting because Apple announced the iPhone 16e, which is supposed to replace the iPhone SE, but it's $600. iPhone SE is $429 and sometimes sells for less than that. And this new iPhone is designed with the new C1 5G modem developed in-house by Apple. And for people who are unfamiliar with the saga behind the C1 modem, it started with Apple actually moving to Intel as its modem supplier. And Intel had Apple as its sole modem customer. And then Intel failed to deliver what it needed to do for Apple to be successful. And Apple left and went back to Qualcomm. And then they ended up buying all of Intel's modem assets in 2019 and some of their engineering. And they seemed to be confident they would have something fairly soon. But it took them about 6 years to do so, almost 6 years. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that modems are hard. This modem does not have millimeter wave. And it also does not have a bunch of other things that we're not even aware of yet, because we're gonna have to get devices in hand. But I suspect it's not gonna have 6 or 7 carrier aggregation, and it will most likely not be a 10 gigabit per second modem. Mm-hmm. But they did make a claim that it will be 25% more efficient than all other modems that have come out before it. They're clearly targeting this towards a kind of customer base that isn't that concerned with modem performance or network performance and is more interested in battery life.
Yeah.
And that's where they went with this. So I have a strong feeling that, edge of network performance will probably not be the greatest. I have a strong feeling that customers will blame the network when signal is poor, as opposed to blaming the device.
Yeah.
And we'll find out. Band support is still unknown, but expected that it will support all the necessary bands that Apple's devices are expected to support in the US and Europe. that was probably one of the biggest challenges for them, was ensuring that they had the right bands in place on this device, but they won't be having millimeter wave support in the US, which means Verizon customers will have a worse experience than they would have if they were on a previous generation iPhone. Mm. But this does have an A18 in it. However, the A18 has fewer GPU cores. Also, this has one less camera than the iPhone 16. It doesn't have ultra wideband. It doesn't have Wi-Fi 7 or 6E. It has regular Wi-Fi 6. It doesn't do spatial video recording. It does have Type-C, but it's very much a kind of fallback version of the iPhone 16. And I went back and looked, and there's only one model of this device, and that shows all of the band support. So it does have all of the necessary bands supported, but you're not getting anything beyond sub 6 5G and or anything above Wi-Fi 6 in terms of connectivity. Also, it doesn't have Qi 2, so it doesn't. I don't think it has MagSafe either.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that have been cut out of this. Also, it's not a dynamic island. It has the good old forehead. So this is like a cost down iPhone, but it's like almost too expensive to be worthwhile, in my opinion. It should be more like $499. Which would make it closer to an iPhone SE. Because if you look at an iPhone 15, which is last generation, you actually get a better modem with more capabilities. You still get Apple Intelligence because it's also an A-series chip that's capable. And those have potentially even better displays. I think the iPhone 15, which is basically the same price right now at $599, it's like a better value. And because of that, I just think this needed to be cheaper than it is. I would have a lot fewer criticisms of all of the things that are missing if it were $499.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I caught some of your preliminary analysis on LinkedIn and on X. And it's interesting that Apple is testing the waters with a featured down version with its new C1 modem, right? Because I'm sure they wouldn't want to go wide and integrate their own modem, I think, on the upper end, right?
Yeah, the way you have to look at it is this is a lower volume part, lower risk. And if something goes awry, it doesn't completely destroy
crater their sales.
Core business, right? Their core business is the main iPhone, and then everything else is secondary. So they will eventually, I think what will happen is we'll get a C1 in this phone, and then maybe we'll get a C2 in the mainstream iPhone, and then a C3 in the Pro series down the road with full feature everything.
Right. Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, it took 5+ years, but it's finally out. So we can, now you can get your hands on a unit and you can put it through its paces, right?
You bet I will.
Yeah, I know you will. Hey, let's go to my second topic. And I want to talk about Airspan, and they're the Energizer Bunny. And we've talked about them before. They've had successful pivots in the past. They were very focused on WiMAX. They pivoted out of that. They had a nice run, and then they got ahead of themselves. And so they had to restructure. And so a private equity company picked them up. We've talked about how they've emerged from that. They've shed the debt. They've raised money. And so there was news earlier this week around an acquisition of Corning Wireless's business. And I caught an article on the Fierce Network about what the company is doing to reinvigorate itself and focus not only on Open RAN, which many believe, and we've talked about this as well, that the Trump administration is going to get back behind, but as well as private networks. And I think for the latter, the timing is great because we're finally beginning to see the adoption on private networks. It's been very long tail. And I think I've waxed on many podcasts about, you know, why I thought that was the case with the different ways to, you know, to get to private, you know, networking through the enterprise and some of the confusion that occurred there. But there's also some acknowledgement that Airspan, can make a go at it. They recently received a $42 million grant to fund RAN development. And yeah, if you look at the history of the company, it's nearly 30 years old, but now it's in startup mode again. I think it's good. I think it's good to have another player. You've got companies like that we've talked about, Mavenir, that have been missing the mark here. JMA Wireless continues to be a very strong contender when it comes to Open RAN and private networks, especially with federal government deployments. But I think it's going to be very interesting to watch the Energizer Bunny and see what happens here. So I don't know if you caught any of the recent news around Corning. We've obviously talked about their emergence from bankruptcy and restructuring. But what do you think? Do you think they're late to the party?
I did catch the Corning component. I think that's really interesting because it sounds like it's right within Airspan's wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And I think it does help them strengthen their like in-building connectivity portfolio. So I think that's good. And yeah, I do think it's interesting when it comes to them that they are pursuing Open RAN more. And yeah, I think you're right. Like this is very much and moving to that direction. I can't say that I really have a strong opinion of like their products themselves because I'm not particularly knowledgeable there. But it seems like they're trying to move in the direction of where the market's going.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish them the best in terms of being able to continue to move in that direction with the market. But yeah, it's always tough when a company goes in bankruptcy, but sometimes companies don't really like launch in the right direction or they don't have the right things in place, but it does seem like they're on the move and trying to move in the right direction.
Yeah. I'm going to try to get time with their new CEO at Mobile World Congress when I'm there in early March. And hopefully I'll have more to share on future podcasts. But let's hit your second topic. And you want to talk about Vodafone and their plans to cover Spain pretty ubiquitously with 5G by the end of this year.
Yes. First of all, Spain is one of the largest countries in Europe. And covering 90% of the population is a big deal. That said, it's not 90% of the country, because the center of the country is almost completely unpopulated, which is really interesting. It's also one of the hottest parts of Europe in the summer. It's not a desert, but it's almost a desert.
What would Matthew Broderick say in whatever movie that was? It's like an Africa hot.
Yeah. And this is their 5G network, mostly deployed on 700 megahertz. But they said that this expansion includes bringing 5G to approximately 1,000 additional municipalities across 49 provinces. And that coverage will extend to 513 municipalities with fewer than 1,000 residents. So that's very much a rural push.
Yeah.
And then it said 388 municipalities with under 10,000, which is still very rural. And then 56 municipalities with populations between 10,000 and 50,000. So those are all very much like small towns that are getting improved 5G or just getting 5G coverage.
Yeah.
700 megahertz seems to be the core of this enablement, which makes sense because low band is really great for that. T-Mobile is one of the few carriers in the world that has access to 600 megahertz. Mm-hmm. But Verizon and AT&T have used 700 and 800 to do that as well. So it won't necessarily be lightning fast 5G, but it will give an improvement potentially over 4G, even if it's the same amount of spectrum.
Hey, I didn't catch this announcement, but obviously Vodafone is heavily invested in AST Space Mobile, and you're talking about rural coverage. Was there any mention of like how direct to smartphone connectivity will factor in all this via low Earth orbit?
No, but okay. I think the important thing to remember is that generally speaking, a lot of this direct-to-cell satellite connectivity isn't going to be very fast.
Yeah.
And you're more likely to want to use terrestrial when you can.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there are going to be places even within Spain where, you know, Vodafone's partnership with AST Space Mobile will come in handy. Mm. People will be able to message and potentially down the future voice and video. I just think that it's a long-term thing. And I strongly believe it will be more of a carrier component. I still believe it's going to be like a component carrier kind of thing, mm-hmm. where people will use 5G as an anchor when it's possible to maintain coverage and then everything else will latch on later on. But it's an interesting thing. There was no mention from what I can tell, but I think it's a net positive because Spain is actually like pretty progressive in terms of anticipating growth and using technology to accelerate growth. And Spain has actually been having quite the economic renaissance over the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
As they've planned their build outs of technology and infrastructure. And I was going to joke and say, maybe I get a chance to try this out when I go to Barcelona, but I'm not going this year. So you might get a chance to experience this maybe up in the mountains above Barcelona.
Yeah, I agree with you. When you look at Europe and you look at technology leadership, traditionally that's been in places like Germany. But you're right, Spain has really picked up the slack. And hey, Mobile World Congress, the big event is in Barcelona every year. And I'm already taking my vitamins and getting ready for that. I'll be there with our chief analyst, Patrick Newman, or Patrick Moorhead, excuse me, and Daniel Newman, the CEO of the Futurum Group. Hey, Pat, I apologize for, but you guys are becoming the same person, it seems, like as you hit the road together. But hey, let me go to my third and final topic. Let me dig myself out of that hole. And I want to talk about Red Hat, Druid, and Napatech. And they're teaming up for private 5G network edge deployments. And I've talked about Druid and Napatech in the past. So Druid is an Irish-based core infrastructure, mobile infrastructure provider in Ireland. If I didn't mention that, I'm actually wearing my Irish sweater that I purchased when I was there a year ago. I had a chance to wear it here in the snowy tundra of Grain Valley, Missouri, outside of Kansas City. But this is an interesting announcement, and it got me thinking, you and I have been talking about hybrid AI and the need to enable edge connectivity. And what's really interesting is what Druid is doing. It's taking a version of its 5G core, and it's basically re-architected it for distributed private 5G deployments for enterprises and at network edges. And I've talked about Napatech in the past as well. They do user plane function offload. And so they're partnered with Red Hat as well to provide sort of a turnkey solution. And in reading, this was an article that RCR Wireless wrote up. They quote a statement, I think, from all three companies about that this effort is maximizing the benefits of standalone networks and bringing functions like 5G packet core more performant to the edge. And I think that's going to unlock a host of new use cases. And we're beginning to see that. And I've talked about when you put computing near closer to the data creation points on a network, you can really supercharge and unlock use cases. And I'll mention this is somewhat related to service provider, but I was spending time with Cisco in Amsterdam a few weeks ago, and they announced a series of smart switches that embed DPUs to basically embed network and security services so they can do a lot of edge functionality here. And there's certainly a service provider angle to that as well. But it's interesting, Napatech's a fairly small company, not well known. Gotten to know Charlie over the years. He's led a lot of the efforts there. He is retiring. So Charlie, I know you listen to the podcast every week. I hope I'm doing this announcement justice, but it's been great working with you, and I wish you all the best in retirement. But at the end of the day, I think this is a very strong partnership, and certainly Red Hat brings a lot of credibility to it. I know you're the device guy and the infrastructure guy. This probably doesn't excite you very much, but anything to add before we move to your third and final topic?
I would say that this sounds like a good team up. I don't really understand Red Hat's role in this, because I know what Druid and Napatech do.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, I think 5G network edge deployments are going to ramp up as 5G becomes more prominent with non-consumer applications and industrial applications become more common and require more expertise.
Yeah. To answer your question, Red Hat handles a lot of the orchestration that makes all of this happen and function. But yeah. Good insight there, my friend. Let's hit your third and final topic, and you want to talk about Oppo and Huawei.
Yes. So this week, Oppo launched its new Find N5, which is a foldable, it's a book foldable, and it's actually the thinnest in the world. It is 8.93 millimeters folded. So it's four and a half millimeters unfolded.
Yeah,
it's only 229 grams. They say it's as light as a coffee cup. Hmm. And when it's open, there's almost no visible hinge. In addition to that, it has a 6.62 front screen. And they claim, I don't know if they claim, but I saw someone claim that their 8.12-inch screen is actually bigger than an iPad mini, which is pretty crazy.
That is crazy.
And then on top of that, it's like IP60, I think it's IP6X. It's got improved durability, better cameras, 2500 nit brightness, 120 hertz refresh rate. It's really like the pinnacle of foldables.
Mm-hmm.
But then this same week, Huawei expanded their tri-fold foldable, which is the Mate XT, to markets outside of China. And I think they did their launch in Malaysia, mm-hmm. while Oppo did their launch in Singapore. So basically in the same place.
Yeah.
And I've been seeing a lot of people posting about both phones. I'm really excited and hope to get my hands on one of them, but no word on US market availability of either. But the one thing to note is when the Huawei Tri-Fold is fully unfolded, it's a 10-inch screen, which is...
Yeah, it's massive. It's massively expensive, too. What's the street price on the Huawei product?
I think that it's not going to be in dollars. It looks like... Yeah, everyone's talking about this and the N5 because they both launched at the same time. But I don't see any pricing. I had Huawei's site open. Yeah. People are selling it for $5,000.
I was going to say, I think the street is like $4,000 on that phone.
Right now it says, so there's a 3,500 euro price point.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
$4,000.
But what they're saying, yeah, it's 3,500 euros. I think the Chinese price was 2,700 or 2,800 converted from yuan, but that's without any kind of transport or tariff costs. And they are all artificially deflate prices in phones in China because there's a lot more competition there too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think these are both great foldables. But I think the thing that makes me the saddest is that they're not going to be available in the US, especially since a lot of people are expecting the Find N5 to actually be available in the US as an OnePlus Open 2.
Mm-hmm.
And OnePlus posted like a couple of days before the launch that they weren't going to be launching any foldables this year. So I was really bummed out because I'm a big fan of the OnePlus Open.
Yeah.
Which was like the Find N3, if I remember correctly. They're like very similar. They're part of the same BBK group. But yeah, this Oppo is 5,600 milliamp hour battery. It uses just an absolute, it's using a Snapdragon 8 Elite. It has everything you would want from a flagship phone that's also foldable, which is what I want. And I was really hoping to get that from the Pixel Fold or Pixel Pro 9 Fold. But I didn't. So I'm back on the Samsung S25 Ultra. But yeah, it's unfortunate, but those are great phones. And if you're not living in the US, I would recommend either of them if you can afford them.
Yeah. Well, buddy. Hey, man, it's been another great podcast. I'm going to have to pack up and drive 12 hours in the snow from Kansas City back home. Do you have any big plans for Friday or the weekend?
No, but I am going to be in New York next week. So that's my travel. Amazon's having a devices launch, so I'll be there covering that.
Awesome. I get a week in my home in Florida next week, supervising a little counter installation, my annual DIY trip, and then I head out to Mobile World Congress. You and I are going to both be on the road for the next several weeks, but hey, it's been another great podcast, my friend. Why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners found this week's topics interesting. If anyone would like to provide insights on a specific 5G topic for a future podcast, please reach out to us on social media. Will is at Will.Tech and I'm at Anshel Sog. We hope you have a great weekend and please tune in again next week. And don't forget to rate and subscribe.